So we're standing in front of Richard's work, which I thought was, or Woha's work, which is a little bit of, not a trick, but it's a kind of a Trojan horse project, because what you see here looks like a beautiful civic centre gathered around a green space like the Quad. And yet when you look more closely at the map, the CBD has been erased completely. So I'm not sure that everyone picked up that gesture, which is, you know, a really big gesture. And I thought it was an excavation, but when I spoke to Richard to get clarification before today, he explained to me that the demolition of the city would produce vast quantities of rubble, and the rubble would then be used to create a higher land, which you can see in this drawing, which was about then raising the city. So the city, the new city, is essentially built on the rubble of the past city. So there's a continuity there, which is like physical, but there's also in the plan a continuity which is to do with the memory of the city. So reproducing the angle of the streets and the names of the streets as piers into this newly cleared space is really central and rewilded. And then the rubble becomes a kind of a levee which holds back the floodwaters. It's also an accessible levee, so instead of just being a wall, it's a stepped like waterfront, so people can get down into that space and enjoy it as a leisure space and a recreational space. So it's a very, very clever project, but also very, I think, cleverly presented in that it asks the audience to imagine this utopian, beautiful setting and then ask themselves, well, what is the price to pay in terms of the removal of the CBD? And then you can balance out, well, this leads to this, so maybe the demolition is destructive and difficult to cope with, but it also might be the clearing that allows a more positive future. He also was very keen that they were very keen that the new city would be insurable. So the combination of this stepped levee and the raised buildings would create an insurance line, which I think is really central for the viability of the city. Now, I think if you were a hydraulic engineer, you'd probably say, well, there's some faults here, because actually the water doesn't just come only in that direction. And possibly in all the projects, there's some kind of flaw that you could be critical about the viability of it. But we need to keep in mind that these architects were working without consultants and without years and years of work, and that really the thing to focus on is, what is the key concept here, and is it translatable? Is it actually something that could be, with some adjustment, realised? So we're standing in front of a project by Li Yangyang. This proposal is to connect the city's buildings at a first floor and second floor level. So it's essentially the creation of a new pedestrian and circulation paths at a much higher level above the floodline. So the city continues to exist on the ground level, but that ground level is vacated of its occupants, so it's no longer retail. It would be temporary pop-up things and parking, other functions that are easily moved and then can be washed out again when flood occurs. Someone asked us, well, how do the architects know anything about the city? How can anyone from outside of the city say anything or contribute anything if they haven't lived through the floods or they don't know the city? And of course, what they're relying on is a huge amount of research which exists. So we put together an archive of plans, photographs, maps of the city, so that all the contributors had a lot of information at their fingertips that they could use to build on. And that's, I mean, architects practice all around the world all the time, so they're very used to gathering information and analysing it, understanding it, and working out and what can be done on the basis of what is known from that research. But there is another level, I think, of detailed engagement which comes from visiting a place and being part of it. And we're standing now in front of Brandon Pay's project. Brandon graduated from the University of Technology Sydney at the end of last year. And the architecture program at UTS, they came to Lismore in, I think, September last year. So post-flood, they came to see what they could contribute in terms of ideas to rethinking the city's future. So he was one of those students. There was, I think, around 22 of them, led by Jared Reinmuth, who's a professor at UTS, as well as a director at Terroir. And Brandon's project was my absolute favourite from the student projects. So his project is also a kind of infrastructure addition to the city, but his infrastructure is discontinuous. It's not a big grid. It is a series of towers, and those towers are attached to buildings or located between buildings. So there were towers that would be located in the backyards of houses and shared by four or six houses. There are towers that would be attached to shopping centres or commercial buildings. And those towers would function as storage spaces and evacuation spaces during flood. They would light up. There would be a way of boats finding people. So they're a kind of really neat, like a rooftop, but allowing all the storage to take place. And then during non-flood, they would also be places for storage, recreation, temporary inhabitation. So they're a fabulous idea, these little towers. So while we're talking about different modes of representation, documentation, persuasive drawings, one of the new modes of representation for architects that a lot of architects are getting excited about, but also some are dreading, is the use of AI. So Virginia, she's not afraid of technology. She's very much engaged in it. And she has been playing with AI images using Midjourney and a number of other different programs where you can search for images and combine things. You need to then work on them. That usually what you end up is not sufficient. She certainly would have worked over these images to create this presentation which shows dirigibles, so inflatable structures that float and have different functions in Lismore. So one of the inflatable structures is a massive, really big kind of a boat, and it would pick up people during the flood. And the idea of the dirigible is it's lightweight, it folds up, you have it ready, and then you blow it up when you need it. There's a church-like one, there's some smaller boat ones and floating pods, as well as some that are bubbles which are sitting on a structure, so they're in position. But the images are so beautiful. We're now at Moon Hoon's project. Moon Hoon is a fabulously eccentric architect from Korea. He's based in Seoul, but he also had his teenage years in Tasmania. His father was an engineer working on, I think, a mine in Tasmania. So he has flawless English and a very good Australian accent and Australian sense of humour. Quite mad. Moon Hoon, Virginia, and Richard Hassel were three people that I appointed as adjunct professors to the School of Architecture at UQ when I was dean there. And Moon Hoon, I used to bring him out once a year in February to speak to the first year students. So he would give a lecture and he would show his work, and his work is outrageous. It's buildings with horns on them and you know, colours and like very strange forms, gold clouds, all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And the students who, you know, they've arrived in architecture, it's their first year, they think they're going to be designing houses for rich people, and then they meet Moon Hoon, and it just challenges every preconception that they have about what it is to be an architect and what is possible.